Hello and welcome to episode 20 of Long Shots, our weekly podcast, where we discuss practically anything that we find interesting, relevant and intriguing. And I have with me Sharad Tupran. And before we go ahead, would like to remind our listeners that we are streaming now on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts and many other podcast apps that you like and admire. So do subscribe to our channel so that you get that nice notification every time an episode goes live. As you know, we generally focus our topics on the world of business, finance and markets. And this week has been no different. Plenty of news around ranging from scams to corruption to the budget coming up tomorrow. So would like to, I guess, get started as soon as possible. So hi, Sharad, how's it going?
It's very good, and I always look forward to Thursday mornings because we can record our banter. And 20 weeks is a mini milestone, I suspect.
Yes, 20 weeks is a mini milestone. It's been quite a ride, I must say. I mean, I remember when we started, we used to record 10-minute episodes.
Yeah, now.
Then we graduated to like 30. We also did, I think, one and a half hour episode. And
the best part about all that is we are catering to some of the requests that have come in from our listeners more than us going on extensive.
Yes, banter. Some strange souls want us to talk more. So yeah. That's always very encouraging to hear.
Yeah.
So Sharad, we are on Thursday, tomorrow, 11 a.m. The interim finance minister, Piyush Goyal, will announce the interim budget.
Yeah, and you obviously have been tracking it much closer than I have. And you published an article yesterday. Was it First Post or Financial Express or both? Which one was it?
Yeah, it was on both. And so it also came on Transfin in the evening.
Of course. And let's actually start talking about that piece you wrote. And maybe you can share some of your views on it. And we can take it from there. So what is your piece about? I know it's a succinct, brief sort of a preview, if you will, and an opinion piece. So what are the big things that you talk about? I remember reading these three words in succession in your article, populism, populism, populism. So for me, that was the biggest takeaway. And I think the narrative loosely would surround that.
Yeah. So actually, when we were kind of talking about the budget last week, I think we kind of had a slight sense of where it might head. But then after our conversation, I obviously wanted to dig a bit deeper. And I kind of looked into primarily what was done in the budget last year, 12 months back, because I think, you know, the budget is not just a forward-looking document. It's an incremental planning tool of sorts. So looking at what happened last year, what were the focus areas, what were the ignores, and what has transpired since then, and how that may shape what will come in the future was like my approach.
Yeah, and I find that a very interesting approach because it's not seen too many times, and I see a lot of news media, mainstream news media journalism sort of gravitate to either an anti-BJP narrative or an anti-Congress narrative. This is sort of real what is happening, and you compare it across, you adjust it basically.
Yeah. I mean, we can always go in a conversation of whether this is something this political alignment prefers or whether the other political alignment has done something similar. That's obviously a separate discussion. But I think the key thing is to look at the present.
Yeah.
And I mean, instead of speculating, we might look at what has happened so far in the recent past to extrapolate that. And yeah, that was the approach. So yeah, the main areas of focus, I think last year we all know, were farmers and welfare, right? We had the aggressive push on minimum support price, MSP. There was the big announcement around Ayushman Bharat, which is like a universal healthcare plan. And the royal ignores last year were the middle class as well as the private sector. So if you recall on mutual funds, the long-term capital gains tax was introduced on equities, which I remember tanked the market.
Yeah, 10% was it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there was no relief on personal income tax. And on private sector, you know, besides the usual spiel on Make in India, Startup India, there was actually no structural reform which was announced along the lines of be it labor, land, inputs, etc. So that was pretty much the summary, focus on farmers and welfare last year and ignores around the lines of private sector and middle class. And then if you look at what happened in the last 12 months, I think the areas of focus of the 2017-18 budget, they frankly did not really pan out well, right?
I mean,
we actually saw a record low inflation And this is in spite of the fact that it was a bumper crop. There were good monsoons. So I guess MSP is not really working well from an execution perspective. And Ayushman Bharat, I mean, at the end of the day, is just a 4 month old. It got implemented its implementation started in September. So it's been a little over 4 months. It's still kind of in pilot project mode. I know the FM, Mr. Jaitley wrote a long blog, not so long actually, on Facebook, commenting on the success of Ayushman Bharat after 100 days.
Yeah.
I spoke with a couple of healthcare professionals, doctors, and asked them how's the progress been in their state. And they all said that, you know, the FM's blog seems a bit theoretical at the moment. I mean, it's still in pilot project mode. It's not really something which has, a lot of states haven't implemented it in full. There are a lot of structural issues, you know, with respect to the underwriting and risk sharing between the healthcare providers versus the insurance providers. So yeah, those two have been kind of blanks.
Yeah. So do you think, in terms of, I'm speaking from my personal interest, but do you think long-term capital gains tax, LTC, like, do you think there'll be a reversal at all? Or do you think that would be too earth-shattering and too dramatic? But I'd be surprised.
I think since the last year's thing was what was communicated was not really delivered in terms of the focus areas.
Yeah.
Plus, what was ignored anyways did not pick up. Like, even if you look at private sector, if you look at the industrial data, IIP data in December was at a record low. And, you know, there's this continuous rate differential kind of angle going on with the US. US rates are going up and up and up, and rates in India are on their way down. I think there's a rate cut expected now, especially after the low inflation data. So the rate differential is going to go up anyways, and that will lead to capital outflow. So the private sector has not really picked up in the 12 months, in addition to being ignored in the budget, it did not really pick up. And middle class, I think it's again a kind of a dissatisfied lot, right? And, you know, the elections are there in May or June, there's hardly any time left to actually come up with something very structural in nature. So I do feel that the government is going to take the populist route, and they are going to focus on the lowest, common denominator, which is basically the mass market, as you say, be it farmers and be it the middle class. So I think tomorrow's budget is going to be pretty much focused.
I agree with whatever you're saying, and I enjoyed reading your piece as well. I feel like from a political standpoint, I don't think either party, Indian National Congress or the BJP, are clear favorites either way. So in that case, I feel like rural mandate or rural strengthening becomes a very popular mandate to sort of thrive on, and this is your last chance to sort of gain some populist narratives in place, right? So
yeah.
Obviously, it'll be very interesting to see, and let's see how it goes. And I'm guessing you'll be closely tracking it. That's what tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe another piece after that.
Yeah, maybe. Let's see. Hopefully, the best way to spend your Friday and Saturday is to write an article, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, but you know, like, the very interesting thing when you mentioned that, if you look at overall the subsidy burden of the government so far, frankly, they have been very disciplined, you know. I mean, if you look at the fertilizer subsidy bill, if you look at wage subsidies, you know, through the rural employment generation scheme, it has not really gone out of whack.
Yeah.
So, plus, you do recall how the government is kind of trying to pull in the RBI, SEBI, other regulators to give them more and more dividend, right, before the elections. So, I think they're kind of developing a kitty for the SOPs.
Yeah, so, that's something very interests me a lot.
Yeah.
Textbook budget definition of sort of balancing the books. If you go the very root of budget is like actually balancing the books. And this is what it is, right? They're trying to strengthen their balance sheets and coercing into public sector banks and issuing one-time special dividends to actually giving back some through buybacks or shareholder buybacks or whatever right? It's strengthening your books, and we've talked extensively on sort of RBI.
So tax swaps for taxpayers and buybacks for investors,
right?
So that metaphor, I think, sticks here.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be interesting. And another thing that we would sort of be closely watched, I guess, is if anything said around GST. because although it, like you alluded to last time as well, like now there's an independent body which looks at it, so it sort of gets divided in terms of attention. But you know, there have been conversations about GST and refining it further from whatever slabs they have, getting rid of one bracket completely. But let's see. I mean, we can speculate as much as we want, but at the end of the day, tomorrow, it'll be, I guess, wait and watch and see what it is. And political mileage is obviously a key underlying factor for them. So you got to use that lens to view it, right?
Right. I mean, and in GST, like if you look at in taxation overall, right, the accruals on indirect tax have been below expectation.
Yeah.
Right. And the accruals on direct tax have been, I think, above expectations. Those are the levers in the hand of the government, right? So there might be some, I would say, positive tax rationalization on the direct tax side. On the GST, I doubt if they are going to spike up rates.
Yeah.
But yeah, then it's a question of whether they kind of rationalize it to internally and, you know, kind of cater to some certain segments of businesses, be it traders, be it small businessmen.
Yeah.
But how they do it, I mean, I don't know whether that will be part of the budget tomorrow or that's going to be a separate piece.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are the levers they have, right?
Yeah. No, it'll be interesting. And I look forward to tomorrow and hearing it. And I would like to take this opportunity to move on to our next topic of discussion.
Right.
And because we extensively talk about budget and GST and also another thing that happened in this regime was demonetization.
Right.
And there were some transactions being made after demonetization, which showed up in the newspapers, which has got Z losing some of its market value through stock price, share price erosion, about rupees 13,000.
Crores, yes.
Crores in market cap they lost
after
some sell-off. And what exactly was happening there?
I mean, I think, I don't know if it's time to look at Z's share price chart and Hitmax to see how it has panned. I have not seen it, so I can't comment on it. But I think what happened was...
hang on. The reason, I just want to let our listeners know that the reason we are laughing is because we, in hindsight, listened to our podcast about 2 weeks back and we made a comment on Jet Airways stock price chart.
Yes.
And Nikhil and I have chuckled about our rather strong views on it. And so it's an internal joke that's played out between Nikhil and myself. And this is just for our listeners to know.
Yeah.
Coming back to Z stock price chart, I haven't looked at it.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a massive downswing in last week.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, I think what triggered it probably was there was a story from The Wire on 24th of Jan, which spoke that SL Group, which is the parent promoter-led group of Z Entertainment, they have links with this entity called Nityank Infra Power, which is being currently investigated by the Serious Fraud Investigation Office with regard to a 3,000 crore deposit they made post-demonetization.
A post being like a couple of days after, right?
After. So that kind of was one linkage with respect to SL Group in terms of... Nityank is a pretty interesting case because it kind of comes across as a classic shell company. It's not really...
Yeah.
There's not much business activity, but it keeps on getting loans from different entities. So there were two allegations that The Wire made. One was that 1,000 crores from Nityank actually were given to a SL Group associated company. And the second allegation was that, if you recall, there was this Videocon D2H Dish TV merger.
Yeah.
And SL made a payment to Videocon through Nityank.
Yeah.
Right. So that kind of links it up. So, I mean, on the face of it, you might think 3000 CR deposit case through the Serious Fraud Investigation Agency and a slight linkage to SL Group. Why does it lead to a 13,000 crore drop in market cap? But what happened was that as soon as the story came out, the lenders of SL who had, you know, lent to the promoters using listed companies of the SL Group's shares as collateral, they started shorting the stock.
Yeah.
So they started, you know, the classic margin loan, right? Where you borrow money from someone and to securitize it, you give some listed shares.
Yeah.
Right?
And very normal trader behavior.
But it's a very risky form of lending, right? At the end of the day, I mean, that's why like the margin lending, the margin in the lending itself is that if the share price is worth 100, you're going to lend at a margin below that.
Correct, yeah.
To kind of put a buffer on top in case tomorrow the market tanks.
Yeah.
So the bank started selling off, and that led to Subhash Chandra, the promoter of Z2, come up with like an open letter. It's a very interesting document, you know, it's like a two-pager where he like goes into this existential rant on how he has made mistakes. And,
including the Videocon DTH, he says it was one of the worst transactions he's made or something.
Yeah, so he made 3-4 points. One was that he regretted making bad bets on SL infrastructure.
Yeah.
Then secondly, he was kind of complaining about D2H acquisition, how it went wrong. And then thirdly, he was talking a lot about unsustainable debt that he had taken over. But, you know, if you kind of just step back from all this noise, what I think kind of comes across, and this actually came very well in this piece on Bloomberg by Andy Mukherjee. I love that guy. He writes exceptionally well. I would definitely invite our listeners to check his work. But he kind of commented that this is a classic case of short-term lending to finance long-term assets.
Yeah.
So if you look at Z, you might think entertainment, content, media, but they're into infrastructure. They are into all sorts of long-term projects, which they are funding with, short-term wholesale loans.
Yeah.
And there's obviously a classic asset liability mismatch there.
Yeah, and this is one of the things that Corporate Finance 101 teaches you, right? To match CapEx profiles with your lending or debt profiles, right?
Correct.
Sort of fuel one of the other.
I mean, banks do that, but that's the core business model of banks, right?
Yeah.
I mean, banks typically raise short-term deposits and give out for long-term lending, right? But banks have entire ALM teams who are doing that for a living, who are making sure that, you know, their asset side is hedged properly and their cash flows are matched. Insurance companies also do that to a great extent. But when you have corporate conglomerates doing that, there's always that underlying risk.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the ILFS storm hit. And thanks to that, wholesale funding in the short-term spectrum, the cost of capital spiked up.
Yeah.
So suddenly you have these long-term assets who are probably not performing as good as you envisaged, and your short-term financing has gone up the roof.
Yeah.
And then your lenders start shorting the stocks, which they have used to lend you the money in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the premise of, I think, Z's falling in recent times.
Yeah, and they need, I mean, sort of a segue, but now that they're sort of doubling down or betting, the next big bet they're making is in the content sphere.
Right.
And that also is very
capital. You mean in the OTT?
In the OTT domain, right? I mean, they already have a product there, but they want to sort of get into original programming. That, again, requires a lot of capital.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure debt will be a big piece of the capital raise or funding mechanism, right?
Yeah.
So all these things are very important. They're intricate because they do need money.
Yeah.
And let's see how that goes. And it'll be funny if 5 years, 6 years down the line, Mr. Subhash Chandra writes another piece and says he was too late to the content game. And then he says that I made some bad bets, including getting into content when it was one of the most competitive landscapes around. We'll see.
But, I mean, I think, you know, in terms of... like, I get it, the diversification is good. I mean, I get that, right? That you need to kind of hedge your bets.
Yeah.
But I often feel, and this is very common in promoter-led groups in India, as well as, I think, startups to some extent, that, you know, to chase growth, people spread themselves too thin. They go into, like, 20 different directions and they don't execute any of them properly, right?
It's very interesting you say that. We've talked about it at a startup level as well, and I remember reading this paper by one of the professors from NYU Stern. I can't remember who it was.
Namodaran?
No, it wasn't him, otherwise I would have remembered. But he was writing about top line, about growth.
Yeah.
And he was making an argument that when people say growth, 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 most businesses are guilty of thinking of only top line growth as growth, but focus should be on bottom line growth as well. So one way is to sort of grow revenues, like you're saying, diversifying into all kinds of weird areas. But is that translating into bottom line growth?
Right.
Is your cost base structured enough or lean enough to drive bottom line growth? Because at the end of the day, that's what shareholders care about. I mean, textbook definition, right?
Plus, I think it's a cyclical issue, right? I mean, if you look at, for instance, Amazon, right? Classic growth story example.
Yeah.
For years, Amazon...
Beautiful stock chart.
Beautiful stock chart. Exactly. Not at all like Jet Airways or Z. I mean, I think, Sharon, it's time to check Z's share price chart. It might actually not be that bad in the long term before we kind of throw a rant at that as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you look at Amazon as a classic case, right? For a period of time, they only focused on books. Then they focused on music. Then they focused on toys. They went, you know, they expanded their company one category at a time.
Yeah.
And, oh, Z has a beautiful share price chart. I do welcome our listeners to check that out as well. Beautiful, because it is also range bound, I would say, but in a completely different way. I would invite them to check it out for themselves.
There is at least one sort of period where you could ride the curve.
Yes, so, there is, right? There
2003
is.
To 2018, you would have made money.
Yeah, now
for
it's,
sure.
Now
it's sort of anyone's guess, but yeah. I'm not a technical expert and not from that school of thought, so who knows, but yeah.
So yeah, I mean, like in Amazon's case, they kind of diversified category over category. Over 20 years, they kind of took the entire e-commerce domain. And yeah, after that, they started diversifying into content. They started. So, I mean, they kind of, they developed that financial moat around them over years before they kind of went into a new category, right?
Yeah.
Whereas I think many of the promoter-led groups in India just preemptively go, you know, they are then touted as being aggressive, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But then they very quickly realize that, you know, they have kind of burned their fingers. I mean, even Reliance Industries, which is probably a very diversified group, it went into telecom only, I don't know, like a few years back, right? Prior to that, I mean, they kind of have really monopolized the petroleum and refinery business.
And with tons of free cash flow generation.
Yeah.
When startups do it without any free cash flow, it's a different beast.
Exactly.
Sorry, yeah, go on. That's
so,
all.
I mean, they kind of reached that saturation level in their vertical. And after that, they diversified. Right?
Yeah.
And so that's why I think that, you know, I mean, even if you look at SL or Z or, you know, ILNFS, I mean, the writing is on the wall, you know, and it kind of is coming out. I mean, last two decades have been periods where I would say private sector financing has been untrammeled, so to say, thanks to risky lending and thanks to political interference.
Yeah.
But as a result of that, now all of these assets are, you know, on a downward swing, and the trust in the system is broken.
Yeah. And to your point about startups, I mean, we were talking about it briefly, but I think now that we've touched on this subject, I guess.
You mean in terms of diversifying?
In terms of diversifying, I think we were talking the other day, was it day before or when we were briefly talking about Ola?
Yeah.
Because we stumbled upon some news and sort of what all they have done in such a short period of time with all the funding that they've raised.
Yeah.
Top line growth in this sort of ride hailing service and growing internationally is just one piece of it. But
yeah.
Co-working is it, and medicinal space, then sort of Food Panda in terms of food delivery, and then cutting it down later,
yeah.
Focus on Prime labels. Like, they've thrown their hands at multiple things as well, right?
I mean, you know, Ola, I think till 1.5-2 years back, I was really liking that story.
Yeah.
Because they were very focused on ride-hailing. They were like, okay, let's do international expansion. Let's go into EV mobility.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, all our associated businesses, right?
Yeah.
And let's see how they execute. But meanwhile, then you hear that they have acquired a pharma delivery company. Then you see that they have acquired a food delivery company. Then you see that they have applied for a co-work. No, that was, I think.
Oh, yeah. NBFC license.
Yeah. Then they applied for an NBFC license, right? And then they cut down costs on their food delivery business.
Yeah.
All that has happened in around like 12 months.
Yeah.
Right? I get it. They are now well-backed. They have good money. But where's the execution, right? I mean, you need to kind of execute in at least one or two categories well before you go into... It seems like, you know, they are just chasing new growth areas, trying to find the unit economics or a scalable business model, right? Because I think in their core business, the biggest strategy right now is discounting.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, that's all sort of the Indian ecosystem, Indian startup ecosystem is so heavily dependent on discounting. Which is good for consumers. But yeah, like you said, like, they've not aced one thing. And I have very similar views as well on them. Like, they can make an argument that at the end of the day, they're sort of in distribution or transportation kind of loose umbrella, right? You know, be it medicine or people, we at the end of the day transport stuff. But that's very loose for it to be work in conjunction. And like you correctly said, execution is a completely different beast. You can't. It's trying to chase top line growth, and that chase will never end.
Yeah.
Yeah. At some point of time, you've got to translate that into strong unit economics and bottom line growth.
Yeah. Because I get the logic behind delivery, but delivering a human being is very different from delivering a medicine.
Yeah.
From very different from delivering your pizza.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they have very they're very varied cycles. They're
different
very
risk varied, profiles.
Yeah. Yeah. Different risk profiles. Different expectations at the consumer end as well.
True.
Right. So just because it's delivery.
Yeah.
Or logistics doesn't make it synonymous with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's one of the textbook examples of chasing growth, top line growth. Who knows? I mean, maybe it helps them in raising another round.
Yeah.
By showing top line growth, be it acquisitive, organic, or whatever it is. At the end of the day, if they can make their top line numbers look good, maybe it helps them. It's a different game, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, you know, lately I'm
not
also,
sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, we had this discussion around the great Indian middle class, right?
Yeah.
We kind of started with a 300 million number, and then
compared to China.
So 300 million middle class. That's the growth that VCs are chasing. That's the growth that startups are chasing, right? But then if you kind of look through it, the 300 million number shrinks down to like a 60, 70 million number effectively,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think there is probably a broad realization that chasing mass market growth only probably does not work. You also need to capture that premium, creamy layer who ends up paying you something.
Yeah.
But it's still a narrative in progress. It still has not sunk in the wider ecosystem, right? Even though probably every unicorn, if you remember, by just unicorn, I recall we were discussing about Jio, right?
Yeah.
A Jio, typical mass market player, their average revenue per user is actually not that low.
It's not. It's in line with the other guys. In fact, it's probably last quarter, I think it was higher.
140.
Something like that. Right? Yeah.
I mean, they also are realizing that at the end of the day, you know, in spite of the sea of humanity in our country, there are a small slither of people who actually have the affordability to pay for these kind of premium services, especially when the scale has been achieved and discounting is no longer a viable strategy.
Yeah, I mean, how long can you compete on discounting, right? I mean, eventually it runs out, the firepower runs out. And that's one of the reasons, I mean, completely different company, but that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons that I really like Netflix when they moved to India. They were very clear that we are not here to discount and lose, yeah, like, you know, $12 or $13 when translated to Indian rupees on a monthly basis is significant. But they sort of did not undercut it to grab market share. Despite competition from Hotstar, like we have like 30 OTT players in the country,
right?
They sort of said that we'll stick to our value proposition. It's for the it is a premium product. You pay for a premium product. We're not going to dilute our margins and in the global landscape. So I like that story, and I think that works.
Yeah.
So let's see what the Indian 7-8 or whichever how many ever unicorns we have and how they sort of leverage that narrative.
Yeah.
Because right now, like you said, it's so discount driven. They're all, it's just like, even when I look at the food delivery services, sometimes like you can get food delivered for 60, 70 bucks now. It comes to your doorstep.
Yeah.
I don't know why the unit economics, how strong or sustainable they are.
Yeah.
There's a promo code every now and then.
Yeah.
And it's good for us. It's good for consumers. So can't complain. But in terms of business ecosystem, like, I don't know, sustainability question marks are, massive overhangs, I guess.
But like, is the Netflix premium story a premium story from day one? Like, I haven't gone through the corporate history.
Yeah, it's like in India or globally?
Globally.
No, it has been a premium story. They're
from day one.
Yeah, they're never, I'm not going into sort of the blockbuster sort of Reed Hastings model, but when they launched the OTT landscape, they were sort of very clear that it's going to be subscription driven, not an ad supported network, and it will be not cheap. And you know, like, people are cost sensitive everywhere. Like, it's not a Indian narrative or a not European. It's everyone is cost sensitive, and 10, 11 bucks, and gradually they've increased prices. They increased, they made a 33% increase in price point last month, right?
I mean,
earlier this month.
Yeah.
So they've, I think, been very clear about it. Even when you read their transcripts or hear them interview on their Reed Hastings or Ted Sandra or whoever it is,
right,
they're clear that we are not here to dilute our margins or value proposition.
Right.
And we are going to continue investing heavily in content. And when you invest so much, we got to, you know, raise the prices.
Because it's I was wondering, is that a first mover advantage game that they kind of aced? Because if you look at, like, I mean, obviously, like, Amazon and Netflix are pretty different companies, right? But Amazon, I think, always had that mass market, price sensitive, customer centric view from day one.
Yeah.
Whereas Netflix had a premium positioned view from day one.
Yeah.
Amazon, it kind of grew on the wave of being the first one on the block.
Yeah, right? On the e-commerce side. Yeah.
On the e-commerce side.
Yeah.
And yeah, at a particular scale, they started squeezing out retailers, they started squeezing out vendors and increase their margin. And now they kind of serve everyone, right? They serve the premium, they serve the mid-level, they serve the low-end customer, right? Whereas Netflix had a, again, I would say a slightly first mover advantage, right, in the OTT space.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And they're pure play OTT, right?
Yeah.
Unlike Amazon, which uses sort of content as just one of the levers in a more robust value proposition, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can say that it's first mover and someone who's valued the premium offering. So let's see how that unfolds with the other Indian companies in India.
Cool. So yeah, I think we're looking forward to what's going to happen tomorrow. I think we'll also do probably a follow-up next week.
Yeah, I think we should just touch base on some of the things that have come up in the budget and share with our listeners.
See how much I was right and how much I was wrong. That's always an interesting exercise.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Even if one is right, I'll be happy.
I think you should be.
Yeah. So, but yeah, at the end of the day, it's an exciting time to analyze the business and economic space around us. And yeah, we'll continue doing that, right? And on that note, I think we can sign off. But prior to that, obviously, would like to welcome our listeners to share your very valuable feedback on by, you know, either rating our podcast or commenting or just dropping us an email. To make it a better proposition. And that's about it, I guess, right? So this is Nikhil.
And this is Sharath.
Signing off.